Dr. Greg Goddard is a public health dentist retired from 35 years of service at the Native American Health Center and the University of California, San Francisco. He used and taught the use of acupuncture in dental care and has a lot to share with us about the prevention of dental decay. Greg, welcome to Naging Now.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Tell me about how you became a public health dentist.
I did a fellowship in the late 1960s at UCSF. And one of the doctors who was doing the fellowship with me was going to Alcatraz Island during the Indian occupation and asked me if I would come over and check on some of the kids that had dental problems. So I started going over there once a week, but me going out there once a week didn't quite work. And then the government came in and threw the Indians off. A year or two later, the Native American Health Center started in the mission. I started working there in 1974 and worked there for over 35 years.
Wow, fantastic. Congratulations. What are some key points that you took away from working with that population in that setting in terms of preventing oral health disease and the impact that has on the general well-being of people?
We were very strong on prevention. Indian Health Service worked closely with the World Health Organization, the United Nations, and was at the forefront of a lot of the prevention techniques in dentistry.
What would you say are the preventive practices?
Well, we started using sealants 30 years ago.
What does that mean?
Sealants are where you take a resin that you can paint on the teeth and it goes into the pits and hardens and prevents them from decaying.
So put the rosin in the beginning of a cavity, or it's like...
You put it in before the cavities start. One of the places that cavities start are in the pits and fissures, we call them.
The grooves of the teeth.
Grooves of the teeth, because food and bacteria get in there, and that's where decay starts. And the other place it starts is between the teeth. To do that, we started again 30, 40 years before using a fluoride varnish.
Interesting. So then kids can eat whatever they want. Chew gum, eat candy, not brush their teeth.
No. Diet is very important also. That's much harder to change people's diet and habits.
But it must be hard to get kids to come in and get this stuff put on their teeth too.
It is, but some of these things can be done by community health workers. The medical doctors also can do that.
Interesting. I've never heard of a medical doctor doing anything related to the teeth except maybe injecting a long-acting pain medication or maybe prescribing an antibiotic until the patient could get to the dentist. Yeah, that's about it.
These are pediatricians that are interested in preventing disease in children. And dental caries, it's actually an infectious disease of bacteria that's transmitted mainly from mother to offspring.
That's so interesting. I've never heard of that a cavity would be a contagious disease.
Yes. When I was in Indian Health, we would get people from the reservations, which would have no cavities. It's almost unheard of. And over the time that I worked, they ended up having decay rates as high as 50% of the children having rampant dental decay. Why did this happen? We thought it was just because they got the white man's diet, candy and sugar and soda pop. That was probably a small part of it, but the other was like the smallpox in the blanket that infected Native Americans. You know, at the time of the original occupation, the bacteria were brought in that caused dental decay, got into the population, and were transmitted from mother to offspring with this poor diet, and it just spread. And the way they found that out was they could actually look at the bacteria and genetically see where they came from, and they were the same as the mothers.
That is so interesting. So is it from sharing food or from kissing or from the birth canal, or what's the story on that?
It's from sharing food. If the mother kisses the baby, if the mother tastes the bottle and gives it to the baby, any mouth-to-mouth contact will distribute the bacteria. The decay had to be brought into the population. It wasn't there. And as the conditions of poor diet took over, then it was able to spread.
Right. So you need the bacteria plus the poor diet. If you just have the bacteria alone and a good diet, you might be spared. Or if you have a bad diet and no bacteria, you might also be spared.
You also have a genetic resistance of the person. So you could have three kids in a family and two of them, the bacteria would not have much effect on it. And the other one would, all the teeth would rot out.
And probably something to do with just baseline nutritional status. I mean, the kind of food that you eat when you're growing up really has an impact on how your teeth develop.
That's correct.
So based on that, it sounds like one of the preventive practices that we could employ is to not eat food after other people have tasted it.
No. To stop the passing on of bacteria from mother to offspring is not practical. The psychological implications of not kissing your infant would be much greater than any dental problems.
What's your opinion on the fluoride controversy?
Fluoride is a natural element. It's in all foods and all water supplies unless you drink distilled water. So it's a natural element in large concentrations. It could be deleterious to your teeth, causing staining and causing them to turn brown. In an optimum concentration, it has a very good preventive effect. A lot of the natural water supplies have a natural amount of fluoride that works very well. Our water supply comes from the snow melt out of the Sierras through Yosemite Hetch Hetchy Reservoir, so it has a very low fluoride content. The city adds fluoride, and that works as a preventive measure for tooth decay. Indian Health used to add fluoride to the water supplies of small villages and such, but given that it's very hard to monitor and it needs to be monitored because if it's not controlled, it can be poisonous. In fact, in Alaska, in a small village of, 30 or 40 people, the person that was supposed to monitor the water supply didn't show up to work for a month or two or three or a year, and the concentration of fluoride got very high, and an elderly man actually died in part because of the fluoride. It needs to be monitored, just like if you're putting chlorine in a water supply or any other chemical, it needs to be controlled.
Wow, that's quite a story. Do you also have an opinion about the mercury controversy?
Yes. Again, like fluoride, mercury is a metal found in nature. It was first discovered as being toxic when they used to use mercury in the hats. And the people that worked making hats at the turn of the century would become basically crazy from mercury toxicity. Mercury has been used in California in the gold mines. It's very heavily washed down through the watershed into the bay, into the fishery. So there's a lot of mercury toxicity in fish. In the food chain, the big fish eat the little fish. Mercury becomes concentrated. Mercury is not eliminated from your body, but stays in the body basically for your lifetime. Tuna and swordfish have high concentrations of mercury. Mercury is a poison.
So that doesn't sound like something you want to put in your mouth.
No, you don't want to put it in your body. But lots of people in my generation, we used to have mercury, called it quicksilver, and we used to put it in our hands and play with it. That's in the liquid form. Mercury is in its pure form is a liquid. And in that form, like most metals, it's hard to absorb in the body. You could hold silver or gold or lead in your hand, and it's not absorbed into your body. Whereas if you breathe lead fumes from lead gasoline, you can get that into your body, or if you eat lead paint, it can be absorbed. Mercury is not absorbed in any significant amount through silver amalgam fillings. It's a silver, copper alloy that has mercury in it. if you took that mercury I was talking about holding in your hand and you heated that up with a flame and vaporized it, it would probably kill you. It would be that toxic. Mercury in a form is a filling. It's not absorbed into the body in any significant way. Mercury is taken into the body mostly through our food sources. Mercury is used as a pesticide with seeds. They put mercury on it to keep fungus off of it, so it's into the water supply, it's into the foods. That's the main way it's gotten into the body. The main way that it is absorbed into the body from fillings is when you grind out the fillings, because that heats it up and vaporizes it. People that have a lot of silver fillings with mercury in them and are told that they need to have those taken out, that process of grinding out all those fillings is giving them a lot more mercury than they would get than if they just left them in.
So they should just wait until the filling either falls out because it's old or that tooth just needs to be pulled or whatever for some other reason, then they could put in the other kind of filling.
Right. And the other kind of filling, which is a composite resin, is also toxic. There have been studies that found that with children that have these so-called white non-mercury fillings have significantly more behavioral problems than kids that don't have them. They're not without toxicity, and they are basically fiberglass, which we know is a pretty toxic substance.
Yeah, you don't want to inhale fiberglass either.
Yes.
Okay, well, thanks for clarifying that for us. That's really important information.
You're welcome.
So, Dr. Goddard, I understand that you've written a book called TMJ, The Jaw Connection. Tell us about it.
I wrote that in about 1990 for patients to learn how to take care of their TMJ problems through self-care, because there was a lot of treatment being done that was being done unnecessarily. Jaw problems is basically a joint problem. It can lead to chronic pain, and there's lots of self-care techniques that people can do to manage those so that they don't have to undergo surgery or extensive, costly treatments. There was a need for that, and I wrote this book.
So what kinds of tips are in there?
Like any other joint in the body, when it's sore, you rest it. If it hurts, you don't do things that hurt, such as eat hard food and chew bubble gum and things like that. You can ice it. You can heat it. Use anti-inflammatories when it gets bad. You can exercise it. All the basic treatments that you would do for any other joint.
Nice. Neck stretching, those kinds of things?
Yes. When the jaw muscles get tight, the neck muscles get tight. So there's a relationship between the neck and the jaw. So stretching your muscles, relaxing techniques, all those things can help.
Fantastic. You know, I started clenching my teeth in my internship year. It's only been this year that I finally got relief. And I've tried lots of different things. The two things that really did it was deep meditation and yoga practice.
Yes, both of those are good. And just the mantra of saying to yourself, teeth apart, jaw relaxed. Just keep saying that over and over.
And doing it.
Yes.
Wonderful. So if somebody wants to buy your book, where do they go to find it?
It's published by Aurora Press.
Great. Thank you for writing it. So Greg, you're a dentist. You've practiced for 35 years, and you also trained in acupuncture for dentists. And I'd like to know how it is that acupuncture plays a role in dentistry.
My use of acupuncture has been for the control of pain, mostly for TMJ pain, chronic pain. I have also used it in order to take out teeth. Most acupuncture needles are painless. People do not even know
that they even got stuck. They don't even realize it. I know a lot of people who actually have a fear of needles, and they say that that's one of the reasons that they don't want to go to acupuncture.
In doing research in acupuncture, I had to devise a sham acupuncture. Patients could not tell the difference between real acupuncture and sham acupuncture. And what we did is we cut off the sharp end of a needle and touch the skin of patients that couldn't see that. And we had 50 students that got the blunt needle that just touched the skin, and 50 students that actually got the acupuncture needle that went through the skin into the tissue, and they could not tell the difference.
Okay, and then what did you find out? You had a basically a control group with the sham acupuncture, which the needles were blunt and they didn't actually puncture the skin, and you had the experimental group, which was getting real acupuncture. Did you use that knowledge to do some other studies on acupuncture?
Yes. We used that technique for our control groups when we treated some patients using acupuncture, and others we used the placebo or fake sham acupuncture, and we could tell whether the real acupuncture worked better than sham acupuncture, and we found that the real acupuncture had a effect in most cases better than the sham acupuncture for chronic TMJ jaw face pain.
Oh, great. So would you actually put the needles right into the jaw, or was it something else?
We put the needles into different places, but basically one of the places was in the hand, which is a point between the thumb and forefinger, which is called hoku. It's one of the most powerful analgesic points on the body, and we would use that, and then we would also use some local points on the muscles that were painful.
Right. Hoku. Hoku is a very powerful point for pain. A lot of people just in the general public are starting to know about hoku, and I see people give each other advice when they start to get a headache. Oh, just rub this point between the thumb and the forefinger.
And if you learn how to do that, it can be very effective. A lot of the Asian patients, when they would come in for dental treatment, before you gave them a local anesthetic injection, they would be rubbing their hoku point.
That's great when something becomes sort of a public knowledge and people start using it for taking care of themselves.
Yes.
So let me ask you this. Now, UCSF, for example, has a whole center for orofacial pain. Are they offering acupuncture there, based on the studies you've done?
No, they aren't since I retired. When I was working there up until 2007, it was offered as a treatment.
Congratulations on your retirement. And we live in the Bay Area, and there are literally thousands of acupuncturists. I mean, I'm sure they could find someone to continue to offer acupuncture as a treatment for orofacial pain, TMJ.
Yes, most acupuncturists are very good at treating TMJ pain. I know the school, the American College of Traditional Chinese Medicine in San Francisco, where I taught, offers it at a low cost, and I would encourage people to try it.
Does the center up at UCSF refer people to acupuncture?
Yes.
Great, and will insurance pay for it?
No.
But the studies show that it works.
Yes. But most insurances don't pay for acupuncture, or if they do, it's at a minimal amount so that it doesn't really make much of a difference. But for instance, Kaiser offers acupuncture. They do not advertise it, but if people talk to their primary care, they can get it also.
So other than TMJ, are there other conditions that you have used acupuncture for? Drilling teeth, taking teeth out, or root canals, etc.?
Trigeminal neuralgia is a nerve pain of the nerve that provides sensation to the face. Tic douloureux is the traditional name.
The brand name.
Yeah, one of the worst pains known to mankind. The only good thing is it only lasts for a second.
Everything is temporary. So you've used acupuncture to treat trigeminal neuralgia.
Yes.
What about a root canal? Can you get a root canal with acupuncture?
Yes. I mean, acupuncture provides a significant analgesia. It takes longer than a local anesthetic. It's probably 80% effective, whereas local anesthetic's 99% effective. Most people would opt to have local anesthetic unless for some reason they were allergic to local anesthetics or had some reason where they did not want to receive a local anesthetic injection.
Do you think that the use of acupuncture in dentistry would make people less afraid to come to the dentist or more likely to go in for more frequent care or cleanings? Sometimes cleanings can be painful too. And
Yes. In some cases, it's a much easier and simpler and less invasive way of getting analgesia rather than having local anesthetic and being numb and having no feeling in your mouth for hours afterwards.
Feeling like half your side of your face is all swollen up.
Yeah.
Even though it's not. Why aren't more dentists employing acupuncture?
It's very difficult to become certified in California. The course requires 80 hours of training.
A week of work for a normal doctor or dentist?
2 weeks. 80 hours.
Well, most are working 80 hours a week, every week.
Which is a lot of time off of a private practice. It becomes very burdensome to get the certificate.
They could hire another acupuncturist who already has a certificate.
That's correct.
You spent your career researching this and serving people, finding out whether acupuncture works in dentistry, and now you've left UCSF and acupuncture left UCSF with you. In your imagination or vision or dreams or hopes, what would you like to see happen?
I would like to see where the dental students could get training in acupuncture, which I used to do. If that would count towards their certification, they'd be able to utilize it.
Is that in the works?
No.
Are there any obstacles to getting it into the works?
Yes, you have the politics of a state board of dental examiners run by the state political system that licenses professionals to be able to do certain things, and it's very difficult to get them to change.
Have any of them experienced acupuncture in their own dental work?
I don't know, but I doubt it.
Can dental students still take the course as an elective and still learn about it, even if it doesn't count towards their graduation?
I don't know if anybody's teaching it now that I've left the university.
So you need an heir to pass on this knowledge?
Yes.
Okay. Anything else you'd like to add?
No.
Greg, it's been really great talking to you. Thank you for inviting me over to have this conversation. Enjoy the rest of your retirement.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Dr. Greg Goddard, dentist and acupuncturist in San Francisco, California. Din tarikita di na tu na ka ta tarikita di na di di na dhan dhan takita tetete dhatarikita tetete kata gadi gena gira naga dene tar dhar dhatarikita tetete kata gadi gena dha dha gena diga digena naga naga na taka takita dhatarikita tetete kata gadi gena dha dhatarikita tetete kata gadi gena dha dhatarikita tetete kata gadi gena dha.